Have you ever thought about how just a couple of words in something like a will could end up causing like a huge legal fight years later?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, today we are going super deep on a Pennsylvania Superior Court case in Restate of Zucker.
Okay.
And whether you are, studying estate planning or just want to understand the difference between having a right now or maybe having to wait for it, this case is going to teach us a lot.
You're right. This case in Restate of Zucker, it really shows how courts work through the ideas of vested versus contingent remainders.
Right.
This comes up all the time in estate law, in property law.
Yeah.
And this case, it gives us a really, I think, clear way of understanding how judges think about this stuff, which is, I mean, it's really important for anybody who wants to work in law.
All right, so try and imagine this.
Okay.
We have Henry Zucker. He leaves a will, and it says his daughter, Pauline Riddle, she gets to live in his property for as long as she lives.
Okay.
We call that a life estate. Pretty simple. But then what happens to the property after Pauline dies, the remainder,
Yeah.
right, is supposed to be split. 50% to the Lutheran home and 50% to George and Ethel Foreman, a married couple, or the survivor of them.
Oh, okay.
So it seems pretty straightforward,
Yeah.
but here is where the legal stuff starts to get complicated. George and Ethel Foreman, they actually both die before Pauline.
Oh, wow. So that really throws a wrench in things.
It does.
That brings up the central question for the court.
Exactly.
Did the foreman's right to that 50%, did that become like a done deal,
Yeah.
what we call vested, the second that Henry Zucker died?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it hanging on them, outliving Pauline,
Right.
contingent, we call that? And this isn't just some like theoretical thing, you know.
Yeah.
This really matters because it decides where that 50% goes,
Yeah.
who can claim it, who gets it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, let's lay out the facts.
Like,
Henry Zucker's will, it was really clear about Colleen's life estate and how the remainder should be split. But what's super important here is the timeline. So George and Ethel Foreman, they died before Pauline Riddle, but they did have a son, George Jr., and he ends up taking this case to court. He's the appellant.
got it. And so the first decision from the Orphans Court, it actually favored the Lutheran home.
Okay.
Their thinking was because the Foremans didn't outlive Pauline, their interest in the property, it depended on them being alive when Pauline died.
Right.
And since that didn't happen, their interest in the property, it basically went away. And the Lutheran home, they were set to get the whole thing.
So the whole legal battle here, it's about timing.
Yeah.
Like, when did the Foremans actually get the right to that 50%?
Right.
Was it set in stone when Henry Zucker died? Or
Exactly.
was it riding on whether they lived longer than his daughter?
Exactly.
It seems small, but it has huge consequences,
Oh
right?
yeah, absolutely huge consequences for who inherits. And running through this whole discussion is a really basic principle in estate law: the presumption of vesting. Here's the general rule. When someone leaves assets in a will, the law assumes that those gifts become solid, you know, set rights, the moment the person who made the will, Henry Zucker, in this case, dies.
Okay.
Like, legally speaking, the system likes the idea of rights being transferred immediately.
So let's unpack that a little bit more, this whole presumption of vesting.
Sure.
What's the reason the law seems to favor this idea of like immediate vesting?
Well, I think it's mainly about making sure that handling estates is stable, predictable.
Okay.
If every inheritance was tied to some event that might happen in the future, you can imagine how complicated things would get.
Yeah.
Settling estates would be a mess, could take forever, and nobody would know what was going to happen. This presumption makes the transfer of property rights smoother, and it prevents a lot of potential legal headaches down the line.
Okay.
But it's important to understand this isn't like an unbreakable rule.
Okay.
If the will is crystal clear that you have to outlive a certain event to inherit, then that condition will usually trump the presumption. So the golden rule here isn't about guessing what someone might have wanted, but reading what the will clearly says.
Okay.
If there's ambiguity, the default is now, not later.
Got it. So, how did the majority of the Pennsylvania Superior Court under Judge Beck, how did they look at Henry Zucker's will with this presumption in mind?
So the majority really came down on the side of the foreman's having a vested interest.
Okay.
Their reasoning was basically that Henry Zucker's will just didn't use clear enough language to make the gift to the foreman's dependent on surviving Pauline Riddle. The will said, or the survivor of them, but the real question is when that survivorship was supposed to matter.
Right. And for someone who doesn't have a law degree, that phrase, or the survivor of them, it sounds like it means whoever's alive later, right?
You're right. That's a very natural way to read it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what the dissenting judge argued. But the majority, they interpret it, or the survivor of them, as probably being about the chance that one of the foremans might die before Henry Zucker himself. It was a way to make sure that even if only one of them was alive when Zucker died, that person would still get the whole 50%.
Okay.
And they stress that unless the will specifically says otherwise, survivor clauses usually refer to surviving the person who wrote the will, the testator.
Okay. So this is where things get really interesting, because they didn't just come up with this interpretation out of thin air, right?
Oh, no.
This is based on some established legal thinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The majority leaned heavily on previous cases, specifically citing Bald Estate and Blow Estate.
Okay.
These older cases already set a precedent for understanding survivor language in wills, reinforcing the idea that it usually refers back to when the person making the will dies. Unless, of course, the will says something different. These cases are kind of like a guide for understanding similar language in wills. And as we talked about, the legal goal of making estate law predictable plays a big role in this consistent interpretation.
Okay, so is there like a really important quote from the majority opinion that summarizes their thinking?
Oh, definitely. Judge Beck wrote, "The general rule is that survivorship language, absent a contrary intent, refers to surviving the testator himself."
Okay.
That really gets to the core of their decision.
Yeah. Now, like we see a lot in legal cases, there was another side to this argument.
Of course, yeah.
So what was the dissenting opinion from President Judge Emeritus Cirillo? What was she saying?
Judge Cirillo had a totally different take.
Okay.
He argued pretty forcefully that the gift to the foremans did hinge on them outliving Pauline Riddle.
Okay.
He interpreted survivor of them much more literally. To him, it clearly meant that both George and Ethel, or at least one of them, had to be alive when Pauline died and the remainder was ready to be distributed.
So the dissenting opinion was really focusing on when the inheritance would actually be given out.
Exactly. Judge Cirillo's reasoning was that since the foremans wouldn't get their share until Pauline died, they had to be alive then to receive it.
Okay.
He also put more weight on what he thought was Henry Zucker's main goal, which was to take care of his daughter while she was alive.
Okay.
And in his view, the will wasn't clear enough to suggest that Zucker wanted to benefit the foreman's heirs if the foremans themselves didn't outlive his daughter.
Got it. Does the dissenting opinion have a quote that sums up their view?
Yes, absolutely. Judge Cirillo said, and I quote, "The gift to the foremans lapsed because they both predeceased the life tenant. There is no ambiguity here."
Okay.
This shows how strongly he believed that the will's wording required survival until Pauline's death.
So this case really brings to light some really basic legal ideas that are super important for anyone studying law.
Yes, very important.
So let's break down these concepts of vested versus contingent remainders.
Okay.
What do they actually mean?
Absolutely. A vested remainder is basically a future interest in a property where we know who the recipient is,
right,
and there's no condition they have to meet other than the natural end of the previous estate.
Right.
In this case, that would be Pauline's life estate.
Okay.
What's important here is that because the right is already secured, a vested remainder can be transferred.
Okay.
So the person who has it can sell it, or it can be passed on through their own will.
Okay.
And, you know, this also means it could be subject to creditors, which is an interesting point.
Oh, okay.
So it's a future right, but it's a right they already have.
Okay, so it's a locked-in future right.
Right.
So how is that different from a contingent remainder?
A contingent remainder, on the other hand, depends on a specific event happening in the future. And this event is not just the end of the previous estate.
Yeah.
Like in Zucker, the orphans court originally said the foreman's interest was contingent on them outliving Pauline.
Right.
But other conditions could be things like the person inheriting reaching a certain age.
Yeah.
And if that condition doesn't happen, the remainder interest doesn't vest and the property goes somewhere else.
Right.
It would either follow the will's instructions, or if there's no will, it would follow the laws about inheritance.
And, you know, we've touched on this, but this case really shows how important survivorship language is in wills.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Zucker shows this perfectly. The usual legal interpretation is that when a will says something like to X, or their survivor, survivor refers to whoever is alive when the person who made the will dies.
Right.
If the will wants survivorship to be about outliving the life tenant, or some other point in the future. It has to say that very specifically to avoid confusion that could lead to lawsuits.
Okay. So what about the testator's intent?
Yeah.
How much do courts actually try to figure out what Henry Zucker really wanted?
Well, the ultimate goal is always to carry out the testator's wishes when we interpret a will.
Right.
But courts always look at the actual words used in the will first. The legal system operates on the principle that the person making the will chose their words carefully.
Okay.
It's only when the language is really unclear or ambiguous that courts dig deeper and try to figure out the broader intentions by looking at the whole structure of the will and any relevant circumstances.
Okay.
And in Zucker, the majority felt that the phrase, or the survivor of them, without more specific language, wasn't ambiguous enough to overrule that strong presumption of vesting at Henry Zucker's death.
Got it. And we mentioned this before, but let's talk about the reason behind this preference for early vesting. Why is it such a strong legal principle?
Well, as we discussed, it's mainly about making property rights stable and making the process of administering estates smoother and more predictable.
Okay.
Imagine if future property interests were always uncertain, depending on things that might or might not happen.
Yeah.
It would be a nightmare to settle estates and make sure property ownership was clear.
Yeah.
Early vesting helps avoid all that mess and keeps property transactions flowing.
So what are the key takeaways from In Res State of Zucker, especially for law students who will be writing wills someday?
The biggest lesson is that you have to use clear, unambiguous language when you're drafting wills.
Okay.
If a person wants the beneficiary to outlive the life tenant in order to inherit, the will has to say that very clearly and explicitly.
Okay.
So instead of saying something like, to George and Ethel Foreman or their survivor, to make it a clear contingent remainder, it would have to say something like, to George and Ethel Foreman if they are living at the time of my daughter Pauline Riddle's death, or to the survivor of them if only one survives Pauline.
Okay.
Without that explicit language, it's almost definitely going to be seen as a vested remainder at the time the person making the will dies.
Okay.
So no implied conditions. Clarity is key.
So even though George and Ethel Foreman died before Pauline, their share didn't just vanish.
Exactly. Because the court decided that their interest was vested when Henry Zucker died, that vested interest became part of their estates. This means it had to go through probate, which is a separate legal process, to be distributed according to their own wills, or, if they didn't have wills, according to the laws of intestacy.
Okay.
So it didn't go straight to George Jr. from Zucker's will.
Okay.
It went through the normal legal process of inheriting from his parents' estates.
So to wrap it all up, what's the main message of In Re Estate of Zucker for future legal minds?
The core message is how strongly Pennsylvania law presumes vested remainders.
Okay.
Unless a will uses super clear language to make inheriting dependent on outliving a life tenant or some other future event, the assumption is that the remainder interest becomes a sure thing when the person making the will passes away.
Okay.
And this case is a great example of the tension that can happen between understanding the words of a will literally and the broader legal ideas that like to see property rights transferred early and with certainty.
This case really shows how even small choices in the wording of legal documents can have a huge and lasting impact on how wealth is passed down and whether the will maker's wishes are actually followed.
Yeah.
It's definitely something to remember as you continue your legal studies and eventually start your careers.
Couldn't agree more. And if you want to dig deeper into this, I'd really recommend reading the full In Re Estate of Zucker opinion and checking out other Pennsylvania cases that deal with vested and contingent remainders will also help you really understand this important part of estate and property law.
Absolutely. Well, that is it for this deep dive. We will catch you next time.
Sounds good.